Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Britta Cruz, registration number 41572, and I represent the defendant appellant, Mr. Harold Myers. As this court is aware, there are two issues on appeal, the first concerning the invalid waiver of the right to counsel pursuant to People v. Arguello, and the second concerning the trial court's failure to adequately inquire into Mr. Myers' competency to stand trial, waive his rights, and represent himself in violation of due process. I believe each of these issues is important, and they are interrelated to some degree. However, given the short period of time I have today, I'd like to focus on just the Arguello issue, unless, of course, this court has other questions. I'd also like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
That's up to you to watch your time.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. The right to counsel is considered one of the most important and fundamental of the constitutional rights afforded to a criminal defendant. Indeed, as the court in Arguello reminds us, the right to counsel is essential to a fair trial. Nevertheless, a defendant also has the right to waive counsel and represent himself, so long as he has an intelligent understanding of the consequences before making that critical decision. Thus, it's long been the law that a trial court must engage a defendant in a conversation before any waiver of the right to counsel occurs, to ensure that the defendant understands both the risks of and dangers of self-representation and the nature and gravity of the proceedings against him.
Ms. Cruz, can I interrupt you for a moment? So is it your position that a pre-printed form is never acceptable for purposes of an Arguello advisement?
Your Honor, what I'm willing to say in this case is certainly this pre-printed form is not sufficient. And I think that's the issue before the court today. To go a little bit beyond that, I think it's clear that a pre-printed form, unless the court engages the defendant in a conversation about the form, is never going to be sufficient.
Well, and that was precisely my question. So let's say, I recognize there are issues with this form. Let's say, for argument's sake, the form was really detailed, and it had all the charges, and it had all of the lesser included offenses, and it had, you know, all of the penalties. Would that be sufficient if the court, you know, the defendant comes to the bar and the court says, you filled out the form, did you understand everything, do you have any questions? If that were the case, and I recognize your argument is that's not this one, would that be okay?
I have to say no, Your Honor. And what you're describing is sort of like a Rule 11 advisement we see in a number of cases. The distinction here is that we're dealing with a pro se defendant, and I'd like to emphasize that in this case, Mr. Myers was pro se this entire proceeding until sentencing, so he did not have counsel there to explain to him what the form meant and what the charges meant, and I think that's a big distinction because typically with Rule 11, you do see the person represented by counsel. And you run into the danger where, particularly if you have someone who's mentally ill, they just nod their head, they say yes, they don't ask any questions, and then the trial court really has no information upon which to determine whether the waiver is valid.
Pardon me, Ms. Cruz, but in this case, the record does not suggest that Mr. Myers just nodded his head and said nothing. He seemed to engage with the court. I understand the argument that he had great grief over the passing of his son, and perhaps that created some mental health problems, but he was not a silent person in this case, was he?
No, certainly not. But he was giving very standard yes and no responses. And the only question he was in fact asked was, did you read the form? Did you have any questions for me?
I understand that originally, but as the case proceeded, this issue rearose and rearose. And during that conversation, he made clear he had concerns like, I'm worried that I'll have to give up my house. And he also made statements like, well, I think that's a risk that I'm going to have to take, and I want to go ahead and proceed. Doesn't that suggest a certain awareness by Mr. Myers of what's going on around him?
With all due respect, Your Honor, no, I don't believe it does. As the court in Arguello makes clear, and also the United States Supreme Court in Von Mulkey v. Gilius, that this needs to be a searching inquiry. We can't presume what the defendant does and doesn't understand. And what I'd like to point out is that the few times the court does engage Mr. Myers, and this happens months after this waiver takes place, and so I don't know that it's really relevant to what he knew at the time of the waiver, but anytime the court did engage Mr. Myers, it becomes clear that Mr. Myers doesn't have an understanding. When the court engages Mr. Myers on his failure to apply to the public defender, we now hear for the first time that Mr. Myers is under a quite mistaken impression that he will have to put his house up as collateral to receive representation from the public defender.
But that gets fixed, doesn't it? Doesn't the court make very clear to him that he's not going to have to put up his house?
Right, 3 or 4 months later, just a few months before trial. And I think what we need to focus on here is at the time of the waiver, the trial court did not engage Mr. Myers or explain any of these important concepts. And one that I'd like to point out that I think is particularly problematic is the trial court never discussed with Mr. Myers that he's charged with a felony that carried a presumptive prison sentence of up to 3 years and 2 years of mandatory parole. And I think that's illuminating because Mr. Myers' initial explanation for why he was going to proceed pro se is he saw no need for an attorney. Well, how would he see the need for an attorney if he's not even aware of the nature of the proceedings against him? Your Honor, this initial advisement was also the Rule 5 advisement, and you can see the entire transcript here. The trial court never discusses this very critical issue with Mr. Myers. And although the written advisement form generically discusses the risks of self-representation, the trial court never engaged Mr. Myers to determine whether he actually understood what those risks were. And as we go along, it's clear that Mr. Myers doesn't understand what the risks are. In fact, the subsequent hearings after the waiver, the trial court asked Mr. Myers how he'd like to proceed, and he repeatedly says, let's go right now. Let's try this case now. This is even in some cases before Mr. Myers even has the discovery in the case. So I think it's very difficult to say that Mr. Myers had a knowing and intelligent understanding of both the nature of the proceedings against him and the risk of self-representation. And I'd like to remind this court that this is a critical waiver. It's a waiver of a fundamental constitutional right. And this court is bound to resolve all doubts in favor of not finding a waiver, and we're not permitted to speculate. And although the court can look at the totality of the circumstances, in this case, none of these circumstances point to the fact that at the time Mr. Myers waived his right, he had any understanding of what he was doing.
You said that a couple of times, Ms. Cruz, and I guess I'm not sure what, when you say he didn't have an understanding what he was doing. The case law, of course, draws a distinction between just not being a lawyer and not knowing your way around the courtroom well, and plenty of courts said that's not a problem as long as you're told it's pretty stupid to represent yourself. And the form sort of did that. I mean, you know, it said this is a bad idea, you're not a lawyer, I mean, I think. I'm concerned maybe your argument is going a little too far. He clearly knew where he was. He clearly knew that he was, you know, he wasn't a lawyer. Now, your argument may well be that this was he's looking at a felony. He didn't seem to understand he was looking at a felony at the time. Therefore, he couldn't assess the risk of representing himself. And maybe that's your argument. But to say that he had no understanding of the nature of what was around him, I'm not sure that that's correct. Back if you like.
Right. And what I would say to that is that based on this record, we don't know what Mr. Myers did and didn't understand. And the times that the court engaged Mr. Myers and we get some glimpse into the way Mr. Myers' mind works, it's very concerning because it doesn't appear that he has a full grasp of the proceedings. And I want to distinguish Arguello from competency, although they are interrelated. It's not merely that he's oriented in time, space, and knows where he is. It's much more than that, because this is self-representation, and we have long recognized that although it's your absolute right, it's a really bad idea, and we need to make sure that a person really understands what they're getting into, and not even knowing that you're charged with a felony that carries a prison term is essential to making that decision. And so I would agree with you, Your Honor, that my argument is really that he was not provided with sufficient information to permit him to make a knowing and intelligent choice.
Counsel, this may be part of your argument, isn't there a difference between saying, read this form, a part of which it says, consider these things, which we never talk about? You know, is there a difference between the judge being responsible for informing you of those things and inquiring of you of those things and simply saying, well, you figure out what they are and you consider them?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That is the critical distinction, is it's not sufficient to just set the information out there. And here, we don't even
I was going to say, did it set the information out there? Or did it just say, here, consider these categories of things which I'm not going to tell you anything else about?
Exactly as Your Honor said. It just set out the categories of things to consider, but then did not fill in the blanks for Mr. Myers. We talked just very briefly about mental health issues, and certainly that comes up in the competency issue also. But mental health is essential to both waiver and competency. And here I think it's very problematic that the trial court never did engage Mr. Myers about whether he was suffering from any mental health issues that could interfere with his ability to understand the consequences of his waiver. And so I think, you know, in combination, all of these things, it's clear the trial court really reduced its serious and weighty responsibility to a mere procedural formality. And that's why I think this case is problematic, because here we've seen just a rote routine where the courts have always intended this to be more comprehensive. You know, to quote Van Mulkey, the United States Supreme Court, Van Mulkey says this needs to be a penetrating and comprehensive examination. It requires a thorough inquiry, and the court must inquire as long and as thoroughly as the case requires. And I think in providing Mr. Myers a generic form that didn't fill in the blanks, that just told him to consider certain categories and didn't give him any concrete information, simply does not meet that standard. And although Arguello says that substantial compliance is not required in every case, they're very careful to say that only in rare circumstances is a lack of substantial compliance going to be good enough. And I simply do not believe that this is one of those cases. If the court has no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, please.
Of course.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Christine Brady, registration number 24779, representing the people. The defendant unequivocally chose to represent himself. He was advised of the dangers of proceeding pro se. If you look on the form, it's all on there. If you compare it to the questions, the trial bench book questions that at the end, the appendix to Arguello, it's all there. I mean,
pardon me for interrupting, Ms. Brady, but to go to the question that Judge Daly asked Ms. Cruz, it's not really all there, is it? Because we have no advisement of, these are the potential penalties you're looking at. There's no specific advisement of that in the record. And also, there's no specific statement that you're looking at a felony and these penalties may end up putting you in prison, not jail, but prison.
Correct. That is the one thing that's not on the form. It's not on the form that he was facing. He knew he was facing a felony, but it's not on the form that a felony carries a presumptive sentence of up to 3 years in prison. I don't know why the court didn't engage him with that particular question, but I have an idea why, and I think it's because in this particular case, the judge thought that he was going to be represented by counsel. At every hearing, he urged him, you know, hire counsel, let me appoint counsel. The problem there was the trial court can't force him to fill out the PD application paperwork.
I certainly understand that, but nonetheless, it seems that we do have a gap here, a hole. And isn't it very difficult to say that a person has made a knowing and voluntary and intelligent choice to go without that which the Constitution guarantees him, counsel, if he or she doesn't know what the possible end result of the proceeding is going to be?
Well, I think in this case, we do look at, the bottom line is, did the trial court abuse its discretion? And we do look at the totality of the circumstances. And what I was getting at before was the defendant knew that he didn't initially qualify for the public defender. So it's not even clear that Aguayo applies here. If the trial court...
Well, let's not go too far down that line.
Okay, that
yeah,
might...
Because the trial court also said, you know, I have a little latitude here. I could help you out if you want to be helped out. So let's not go too far down that line.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, as I pointed out before, the trial court can't appoint counsel without the paperwork. That's what the statute says. First, the defendant has to fill out the paperwork. The public defender reviews it. If they reject him, then the trial court has the discretion to review the paperwork and say, well, okay, your income is too high, but then I see that you have some expenses here. Your assets aren't a problem, so I'm going to go ahead and appoint counsel anyway. But there's no paperwork here.
Are you saying that the issue every time it comes down to knowing involuntary and intelligent waiver of the right to counsel, appointed counsel, will always come down to whether there's paperwork in the record?
No.
I thought that's what you had said.
That's not. That's one fact that I'm pointing out, that we do not have paperwork that shows he was even entitled to counsel. And in fact, he gave financial information to the trial court that showed he was not entitled to counsel. So
where is that argued in your brief? I didn't see that argued that he was not entitled to counsel.
Well, Your Honor, it's not in my brief because we don't know for sure, because as you've pointed out, since there was no paperwork, the trial court wasn't able to exercise its discretion to go ahead and appoint counsel.
Well, before we get to exercise of discretion, how about the issue of knowing and intelligent waiver of counsel? And let's go to the form. Look at the form. Please consider all these things. First of all, are laymen really all that detail attention to forms, counsel, in your experience? Does everybody read every word that's on a form?
Well, the trial court did ask him.
The trial court asked him.
Engaged him. He said, "Did you read the form? Do you have any questions?" He asked him a few times.
He asked him twice. Did you engage? Did you read it? And did you understand it? Is it the trial court's responsibility simply to say, "Here's a packet of information. Any questions?" Or is it the trial court's responsibility to impress upon the defendant the importance of certain types of things in his or her decision with respect to this right, which seems to encapsulate almost every other right? Was that a question? I hope so.
Okay, yes, that was a question. It is a trial court's responsibility, but I think the trial court did engage the defendant over and over about what was important here, and that's about the dangers of proceeding pro se. The defendant really didn't want to hear it. He had made up his mind, no, can't afford a lawyer, I don't qualify for the public defender. I'm not going to fill out the paperwork because then I have to put the information about my house and the assets. And I would like to make a point about that is that
he might have filled out the paperwork if he'd known he was facing, you know, 3 years in prison.
Okay, well, I have, this is, of course, not all on the record.
Well, then, should we be talking about it?
I would like to point it out. That he engaged in plea negotiations with the DA. And the DA explained to him that...
Is it in the record?
The plea offer was put on the record, and the DA said to the trial court, I did inform the defendant that the plea offer will be that we could get a deferred on the felony, and I won't ask for any jail. Now, what are the chances that the DA didn't say you're facing prison?
Well, you know what? We're pretty much speculating. What are the chances that the DA said this and represented the DA playing both sides of the fence? I represent you as well as prosecute you. What are the chances the DA was looking out for Mr. Myers' interests?
Well, he did want to give him a deferred judgment, which would mean that the felony would go away. But you're correct. That is not on the record. I just wanted to point out one thing about filling out the public defender paperwork. The trial court did explain that he would not lose his house, and he still didn't want to fill out the paperwork. He said that he understood that. And if you look on the application, it does say, what are your liquid assets that can be converted into cash? And the defendant was worried about his home equity. So that was a reasonable misunderstanding. It's not that he was irrational or he had a paranoid fear about the public defender. And he did affirm that he did understand that. So back to the issue about the Aguayo factor that's missing, the 3-year possible prison sentence, I would submit that that was never a possibility here.
Well, how about this? The form says consider the complexity of the evidence. But reading the words and hearing the judge pronounce the words and actually get some kind of feedback as to do you have any idea about the complexity of the evidence may be two different things, counsel.
I would agree that that would have been the better practice. Apparently, this trial court does use this form, and I think that this judge is accustomed to people asking questions. But those are people who are interested in being represented at trial. The defendant did have a constitutional right to do what he did here. He wanted to proceed pro se, and there wasn't anything that was going to change his mind.
Well, I think that may be a bit speculative since he wasn't given or told or asked about some very important information, you know, some of which is, you know, yeah, it's on the paper about, yeah, there's inherent risk, but it's a little bit different when someone actually tries to impress upon you the risk of representing yourself. So when you say, well, he made a choice, you know, he made the choice, well, he may not have known what he needed to know to have made that choice. So I'm not sure, you know, the argument still has to come back with how are we going to be assured that the record does show that he did know and was sufficiently impressed with these types of things?
I guess we don't know from this record, so perhaps a limited remand.
Let me ask another question about the analogy that's been drawn between this and Rule 11 advisements.
Correct.
Obviously, there are a variety of different printed Rule 11 advisements used throughout this state, and many of them have been found to withstand scrutiny. As long as the court makes sure that the defendant understands what's in them and what's in them is complete. But if we were looking at a guilty plea here, and there was no indication in the record that the defendant pled guilty being aware of what the penalties were, we would find that written advisement to be inadequate, wouldn't we?
We would.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, the people ask that this court affirm the defendant's convictions.
Just a few brief points. I just want to touch very briefly on voluntariness because I believe the Attorney General has sort of emphasized over and over again that Mr. Myers wanted to go pro se. But voluntariness is not the issue in this case, and the case law is clear that even if the defendant says he understands and that he wants to go pro se, the trial court's duty does not end at that point. Judge Daly, I believe, is of the same mind as me, but I would object for the record, the Attorney General citing outside of our appellate record. The Attorney General just mentioned for the first time here at oral arguments that she believes a limited remand would be the appropriate remedy in this case, and I disagree with that. Lack of a knowing and intelligent waiver is structural error requiring reversal. And just going back to determine whether Mr. Myers knew he was facing prison is sort of beyond the point now that he's been convicted. And that's not the only thing missing from this advisement, as I set forth in my brief. And finally, as to the Rule 11 analogy, I would like to basically agree with you, Judge Bernard, that we wouldn't permit a defendant to plead guilty on the kind of information that Mr. Myers was presented with here. and the United States Supreme Court in Von Mulkey again, which is cited extensively by Arguello, actually explicitly says that the waiver of the right to counsel is as important of a concern for someone pleading guilty as it is for somebody waiving their rights in proceeding to trial. So I think to that degree, that is a good analogy to this case.
Can I ask you a question, counsel? Does the Arguello procedure of advisements and inquiry apply only after a person has been determined to be indigent?
No. I believe that this is when the entire conversation takes place. Because Arguello concerns, you know, appointed counsel, it concerns hiring your own counsel, it concerns representing yourself. This is a very important decision, and a lot's going to go into that decision.
So it applies even if you have the ability to retain your own counsel?
Yes, I believe so. If the court has no further questions,
thank you.
I would ask the court to reverse Mr. Meyer's convictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course. Please, safe journey home. We're going